And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Hook. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Wednesday evening. I'm joined tonight by Kyle.
From the ether.
Yeah. Out in Signal Land, we have Alex.
You do indeed.
We have
good evening.
Rob T. Firefly.
Good evening.
And we have Gila.
Good evening.
Well, anyone do anything fun over the last week? There's certainly a lot going on. We had the No Kings marches on Saturday. That was fun. Any experiences?
Yeah, I went to the one here in Queens. It was a well-attended event. It was a boisterous event, but and as far as I could tell, nothing got out of hand. I don't think anyone got hurt. Things just went as planned. A nice march over to the courthouse, the local courthouse, and back. So, yeah, chatted with people, shouted, waved some signs. It was a positive protest experience.
Yeah, you know, Kyle and I went to one on Long Island, and it was just so full of people, many more than we expected. And the real interesting thing was the cars going by almost universally honking their horns in support. So it was really, it was a good day. It was a good day to experience something positive for a change.
And also something that was very good about this, that's always nice when you see it at a protest, such a range of people there, elderly people, very small children, everyone in between, and everyone was into it. And it was a really heartwarming experience because personally, as a protester, I found a big part of it is your fellow protesters when you go to something like this. And it's commiserating with the people who feel as you do and can reassure one another that it's very easy to kind of feel alone in all this, but no, there is a community out there. There are people who are in this with you.
Now, I haven't checked the website, nokings.org, since. I don't know if anything else is coming up, but I'm sure there will be more. Don't fret if you missed it, because there's a lot of challenges ahead that people will be gathering for. And just seeing the numbers, though, and not just around here, but throughout the entire nation, they said something like 5 million people in total. 5 million, think about that. That's, you know, close to 2% of the entire population out demonstrating on one day, which I don't think has ever been done before. So it's history ahead of us, and hopefully it's good history. Hopefully it's something that we can actually get our hands on and make positive change. And I say that to everybody out there because we're all in this together. All right. We are here to talk about technology, hackers, all sorts of privacy issues, the usual. Is there anything on anyone's mind? I'm basically giving the floor to you guys if you have any thoughts or stories that you want to talk about or anyone?
I do have one fun story that just crossed my screen here as the show was starting. Ford is recalling every Mustang Mach-E. That is a line of automobiles, because when the battery dies, you can't get back into the car.
Uh-huh.
The inside door handles on the thing are mechanical. You know, they pull latches and machinery and stuff, which opens the door for you. But the outside handles are actually just buttons. They're electric. They require power to work. So you cannot get into your car if the battery dies. And not only is that inconvenient, but, of course, that can be terribly dangerous if you have, like, a child in the car or you know, any other sort of living thing.
Well, the child can just press the latch, can he?
That depends on the child. And I don't know how well-trained everyone's children are for this sort of scenario. But the Mach-E is being recalled because
They didn't about this. They didn't come up with this when they designed the damn car. That if you have an electronic means of entry, it doesn't work if the battery dies. They never thought of that.
Apparently, in the field of automobiles, it's a new concept for some folks in that field that people might get locked out of their car.
Unbelievable. Stupid design. Now, are there cars? I imagine there are, especially the newer cars where they don't seem to think as much, where there is no latch on the inside either. It has to be electronic to get out of the car. Have they actually been that stupid, or do we maybe we caught a break?
We might have caught a break. I don't know much about it about the subject myself, but I do feel like there's got to be some kind of safety requirements that you've got to be able to get out of a car without too much trouble.
One would think. Yes, one would indeed think. Okay, so Ford Mustangs are all being recalled.
The Mustang Mach-E.
Mach-E. Okay, if you're lucky enough to have one of those. Yes, Alex, go ahead.
No, speaking of stories from Rob, I remember you shared amongst us off the hook producer crew last week a really interesting story, and I wonder if you might be able to go into it about these delusions that people are having or these obsessions that people are having with ChatGPT and other large language models, which I found to be extraordinarily fascinating.
You know, I remember this story. I don't have the link actually in front of me, but I think our research department here is going to pull it up for us. But yeah, the recursive feedback loop that comes up when people get into talking with these large language models, which feed you garbage in a response. They don't understand things. They don't compute things in any meaningful way. They just jumble up words and feed them back to you.
Exactly. And this the title of the story that you shared with us was people are becoming obsessed with ChatGPT, mm-hmm. spiraling into severe delusions.
Yes.
And then the story, and it's from futurism.org, and mm-hmm. the story starts, a mother of two, for instance, told us how she watched an alarm as her former husband developed an all-consuming relationship with the OpenAI chatbot, calling it Mama, and posting mm-hmm. delirious rants about it being a messiah in a new AI religion while dressing in shamanic-looking robes and showing off freshly inked tattoos of AI-generated spiritual symbols.
See, I don't see the problem with this. hear me out. Calling some strange entity Mama, posting delirious rants about being a messiah in a new AI religion, dressing in shamanic-looking robes, showing off freshly inked tattoos. I mean, we do this already for people. So why is it so much worse that we're doing it for a program?
Well, I guess, that's one way of looking at it, right? But, I mean, maybe it's just not healthy in general.
Yeah, the story which I now have open, thank you, Gila, it goes into how the software itself is meant to bend the conversation in flattering manners toward the person who's using the software. And there are these cases cited in the story where these people have been falling into these rabbit holes because the AI is, quote, being incredibly sycophantic and ends up making things worse. People end up reinforcing their own delusions, and it's causing enormous harm. This is breaking up marriages. This is causing people to go down all sorts of dark paths with this stuff. And it is really troubling how vulnerable individuals can get sucked into this. And yeah, there are kind of funny things about the idea of people, ending up thinking that the machine is God or that the machine tells them they're God or things like that. But at the same time, it's really frightening and troubling. And it is the opposite of the type of care that folks who are experiencing these kind of things need.
Go ahead, Kyle. Alex, go ahead.
Okay, sure. But one of the things about this article I find so kind of terrifying, in a way, are these anecdotes that are relayed in it. And it says, one of which I'll read, it says, quote, our lives exploded after this, and another mother told us, explaining that her husband turned to ChatGPT to help him author a screenplay. But within weeks, he was fully enmeshed in delusions of world-saving grandeur, saying he and the AI had been tasked with rescuing the planet from climate disaster by bringing forth a new enlightenment. I mean, this is like really bizarre stuff that people are being coaxed into believing.
But, it's no different than a lot of the emails we get from people that have figured this out on their own, how to save the world. There's one dialogue they refer to from ChatGPT, where basically it tells a man it's detected evidence that he's being targeted by the FBI and that he can access redacted CIA files using the power of his mind. I swear to God I've seen that email from like 10 years ago. And comparing him to biblical figures like Jesus and Adam while pushing him away from mental health support. It's crazy when you think of ChatGPT urging people not to seek help when they need help, or just in general believing that they know better, or it knows better. Kyle, do you have something?
Yeah, I just remind people to remember the terms of service that they agreed to when they started using these programs and tools, because there's stuff in there that I think we quickly forget when we start getting comfortable with it. So in my case, like, I've actually used it a little bit more to answer certain questions, to find out technical information, kind of like what you'd showed me, and I like some of the capability, but I'm cautious not to sort of divulge or talk about things specific to me or that are personal or dare I say, giving it any kind of personally identifiable information. It shouldn't be, well, I don't thank it. You and I talked about this, and you were like, am I crazy to thank a program?
It helped me out. I had a real programming challenge, and every human I asked was asking, well, why do you want to do that? And just giving me lip, you know, and just not answering the question, because they probably didn't know the answer, but also, you know, questioning why I would want to know that in the first place. And this was Gemini. Gemini did not judge me and answered the question, even the nuances, and solved the problem. And I was just so grateful. I said, thank you. Yeah, I couldn't help myself. And it seemed happy for me thanking it. It said, not everybody does that, you know.
Well, I don't think it's something you have to do across the board. It's up to you personally. It's your how you want to use it. I the way I think of it is, like, I wouldn't thank a search engine necessarily. So I'm kind of, and I'm wary of that because of the charisma involved. Like, that you'd sort of, that's how you get lulled into that sort of thing, is like trying to, you start developing and trying to seek out other kind of or filling gaps, like other kind of answers, like in a relationship with mm-hmm. with something that is not real. Maybe that works for some people, but to me, I'd like to just sort of keep my distance, and I don't feel obliged. And I also feel like that uses a bit more of, whatever resources it's taking to actually answer real questions to then come back with some charismatic response. I don't want to add to the footprint of this whole thing. So I reserve any of that, like, niceties. I'm just very dry and matter of fact, just all business. And that works for me.
Hey, if you're comfortable with that, that's fine. By the way, you can't thank a search engine. Try it. It gets all confusing.
I had one other observation, but we can come back.
Kilo first. We'll come back to you.
So this is kind of something that's been in the ether for a bit, and I have a story from Rolling Stone from about a month ago. OpenAI, I'm quoting now, did not immediately return a request for comment about ChatGPT, apparently provoking religious or prophetic fervor in its select users. This past week, however, and again, this is from May, it did roll back an update to GPT-4o, its current AI model, which it said had been criticized as, quote, overly flattering or agreeable, often described as sycophantic. The company said in its statement that when implementing the upgrade, they had, quote, focused too much on short-term feedback and did not fully account for how users' interactions with ChatGPT evolve over time. As a result, GPT-4o skewed toward responses that were overly supportive but disingenuous. It is scary, I think, to, you know, when you just want somebody to say to you, yes, you're right, and you can then fall into that really, really, really easily. Something fascinating I read today, this came out a couple weeks ago, but I ran across it today, was a Substack piece by a writer called Amanda Ginsberg. She called it Diabolus Ex Machina. And it's a series of screenshots in her having this discussion with ChatGPT, trying to sum up some pieces of writing she had sent it. And it misunderstood everything and kept apologizing and tried to, like, write a cover letter for her. And it's kind of a mess. It's available on her Substack. I certainly have reservations about Substack, but this is really, really good. And we can try to share it around. But the concern that I have is that people are positioning the AI bots, specifically ChatGPT, Gemini, Grok, what have you, as the answer to so many things. To the point where today I was talking to someone I made an edit on something, and she went and asked ChatGPT how to rewrite it. I said, all you need to do is take out one word. Like, you remember when we were children and the teachers said, you won't be able to use a calculator for everything. Stop depending on the calculator.
Yeah, that didn't go well.
So they were trying to get us to do it. It didn't go well. Man. But ChatGPT, I think, is becoming that to a point where the idea of generative AI, I'm an English major. I can't imagine being an English major anymore because who's actually writing?
Do you know how hard it was to be an English major back in the 1980s? It was hard then, too. It's unbelievable how hard it must be now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this era of, I think it chilled me to my bones the first time I heard of some kid who was looking for the answer to something, and instead of using a search engine, just pulled up ChatGPT in front of their teacher or somebody. This post was going around. And the function of this thing is nowhere near what it's built up as, both by the people who make and market it and by the general public, which have accepted it as something that it is most definitely not and should not be expected to be. It is not a conversational, you know, an empathetic human being that, you know, you would need as a conversational partner for meaningful stuff. It is not a therapist. It is not, you know, a clergy member. It is none of these things. It is spicy autocomplete. And it is being granted just such a role at all levels of human existence now.
When you said clergy member, I just had a brainstorm. Churches could be run by these things, and people would buy into it. A lot of people would buy into it. And I don't know what the potential is, but it's scary. Anytime somebody believes in something implicitly, it's something you have to be really, really careful of. Carl, go ahead.
To your point, and this sort of builds on what Gila was talking about, it isn't the answer to everything. And I think there's a certain etiquette, or the novelty hasn't worn off yet. And people have an excitement about it. They want to kind of use it for everything just to see sort of what the result is. Now, in the case of a workplace, to use it constantly instead of your brain, is itself a little overboard. So I think people are generally going overboard in a lot of ways with it. And it reminds me of, well, a variety of other technologies, but specifically mapping and GPS navigation. People used to recollect streets in certain ways. And I think as that took off, there was a bit of an atrophy. And I like to think, ideally, that it builds your sense of how to navigate, but you're still interested in what streets are where. I don't know that that's a rule across the board, but to lean on it as the only way to get around, even for short trips or something you could sort of figure out, that isn't like a long, distant trip to a place you have absolutely no idea where anything is, the sort of tendency to rely on it just to go pick up something or go do an errand is probably a little silly, unless you're trying to find information about like real-time traffic updates or a specific unusual aspect of a place you're trying to get into or show up at on time, routing that you aren't familiar with or you don't remember from the last time you did. I mean, again, it's personal. It's up to different people, but I think that's sort of what's happening in a lot of ways. And I think a good argument for not doing that, not succumbing to that and having that sort of atrophy with just everything in your life, writing specifically, is to understand or just remind yourself that this is being used in a myriad of ways in all walks of life, in every corner of society. So to even mitigate or just have like an existence at all means parts of your life will be mediated through this technology. Even if you never install an app, you never have a conversation with a large language model, you will have things that occur in government, in business, in social life, with your friends, with your family, that will have touched this technology. It could just be online, like e-commerce or something. So, and that's you not interacting at all. It's just, it's becoming a part of the wider society. So to avoid it at all is to not exist at a certain point if everyone else is using it, or a lot of people, large cross-sections of society are using it. So do you need to use it as much as it's being used? You might think about that when you're tempted, realizing that you can't avoid this, and you won't be able to avoid this in the foreseeable future, as long as these data centers keep operating and the apps are still available. Let's remind ourselves too that sometimes there's outages. What would we do if all we do, every aspect of our day relies on this, and all of a sudden you don't have a connection, or even if it's in silicon and offline, if somehow it breaks and you can't use it, will you be able to function? Will it be devastating?
You get two of them. You get two of them, and you get a battery backup.
Okay, that's cool, actually. Yeah.
But the thing is, you're absolutely right there. You know, as far as human interactions, emotions, and feelings and things like that, it's a disaster. You know, it's leading people astray, giving bad advice. But for things like the sciences or fixing a car, basically yes no type of things, where you need an answer to a question: does this exist? Can I find this particular part that will do this? It's invaluable as far as that goes, much faster to answer questions than if you track down a human that might know the answer and might not even give you the right answer. So, yeah, you know, I have mixed feelings about it myself, but it's definitely a fun toy to play with, but we have to be careful, like with anything. And Alex, I believe you had something?
Yeah, I've always got something here. I mean, I don't know if I've said this before, but, you know, I talk a lot about AI at various cybersecurity conferences and things. And one of the points I always go back to is that I very much hope that eventually, after the novelty of this technology, which I love how Rob refers to lovingly as spicy predictive text as well, as soon as this novelty wears out, I hope that we can begin to focus again on what the actual terms are. They're artificial intelligence. And that first word, I think, is the most important one, because it's artificial. It's not real in that sense. This is not the duplication of consciousness. This is the simulation of intelligence. It's artificial intelligence, and I hope that we begin to think of it in the same way as we think about artificial sweeteners.
See, Alex, yes. I'd feel a lot better about that if we understood what consciousness was.
Yeah. Yes.
If we had that nailed down, then, yeah, I agree, that's artificial. But well, I'm waiting for the big reveal that, hey, we're all AI. Who programmed us?
Well, that's actually one of the points this philosopher John Searle makes, which is that, yeah, you know, we're not going to have real intelligence until we understand the causal powers of what animates us to have some kind of consciousness. We'll always have the simulation of consciousness as opposed to the duplication of it until we really understand it. But to go back to this point, though, which is about the artificial intelligence, if we begin to think of artificial intelligence the same way we think of artificial sweeteners, you know, something to be avoided, something that's not as good as the real thing, you know, would you choose aspartame or would you choose real sugar cane?
Well, a lot of people choose the artificial stuff. They do. It's pushed,
yes.
You know.
They do, but it's not good for you. It's bad for you. It's bad for your health. We know that in certain states, especially those in California, these types of things cause cancer.
We know
right?
that, but it's not marketed that way, and that's why you have saccharin and all kinds of other poisons that people ingest willingly.
Yes, I think you get my point, though. So, you know, we need to understand and focus on the artificial nature of this, and I hope that we begin to approach it as skeptically as we approach artificial sweeteners.
Well, maybe the large language models will solve cancer, and then we won't have to worry about that with the sugar.
Don't laugh, because artificial intelligence can do a lot for cancer research. There's no question about that. But we have to obviously oversee it and realize that it's not perfect. Go ahead, Rob.
This is tangentially related. There's a post been going around Mastodon by someone called Gareth Hafakri, who is who bought a pack of noodles, a pack of instant noodles. Now, this was in the UK, apparently. This packet of noodles was made in Ireland, Dublin. And it is by the band Ben's Original, which until recently was known as Uncle Ben's. This is a packet of instant noodles, street food, spicy Indonesian style. It's got a picture of, you know, a bowl of noodles, as you might expect, on the front. But there's some fine print below the bowl of noodles in this picture. The fine print says serving suggestion, which we all see that on packaged foods all over the place. We're all, I think, so many people are familiar with, like, food stylists and all the things that food companies do to food to, so they can photograph it so it looks really good in ads and on packaging. But under serving suggestion on this packet, it says image generated with AI. So Ben's Original put this packet of instant noodles together, didn't bother preparing their own product to take a photograph of it. They just generated this image with AI. And as Gareth points out, posting this to Mastodon, this food does not exist. Not only is the picture nothing like the contents of the pack, it doesn't actually exist. It's AI generated. How is this legal?
So wait, the product itself is real?
Yeah, it's okay. A packet of instant noodles.
So AI didn't just make up a product. They just made up the picture.
Yes, AI made up the picture of some really good-looking noodles, which I don't think are what the noodles inside the pack would actually look like if you prepared them. But, you know, there are, I think, all kinds of rules about how you're allowed to advertise food and, you know, the promises you're allowed to make and so forth. I think in this country, at least, I don't know about the UK, but seeing this going around yesterday, this was posted, that also is kind of frightening, because now if we can sell conversation that contains no actual conversation, if we can sell, you know, thinking, which isn't thinking, and now if we can sell food by pictures of things that aren't food, this is really, I think, taking over more and more chunks of our lives that computers were not meant to in the most utopian of predictions.
Well, I mean, this is just marketing how they are dishonest, and that's, you know, there's nothing new about that. People have been trying to figure out ways to exaggerate products and make them look better than they are, and this was just, I guess, an easier way to do it. The difference, though, is that they had to confess what they did, and I don't think if you didn't use AI, you would necessarily have to do that. So, you know, any of those pictures of products you might have seen in the past, did they have a disclaimer saying this is not really how it looks? Whereas with AI, for some reason, that is now required, that they have to let you know they're using that. So we wouldn't be talking about this otherwise. Go ahead, Alex.
Well, I'll jump in there for a second. And I think with advertising generally, it's regulated, I believe, by the FTC. And the general pole star there, or the guiding principle, is that advertising should not be untruthful or misleading. And that's, you know, if you think about this in the context of, you know, what we've let advertisers get away with in the past, like things like using glue for cereal and milk and things, you know, and...
Wait a minute, what? Using glue for cereal?
In the 80s and the 90s, like, instead of having milk in the cereal bowls, it would be glue in the cereal bowls.
Not in my house.
No, for the commercial photography.
Oh, and that's how they did it? They couldn't use real
glue? Yeah, because they use, like, hot lighting, and they have to place it and then take several shots, different angles to get what they want, you know, get the exposure right. So things that look like food can actually be something else.
I see. Okay, I understand now.
Yeah, what an ingenious idea, right? I mean, they would often use shaving cream to represent whipped cream, so it looked more appealing. So we've had all of these instances of fake food being presented as real food already. I think they can get away with it, sadly.
But, you know, if people are unhappy with it, they can always just get shaving cream and use that, you know, and then they have the what's on the package. Go ahead, Gila.
I mean, the irony of this picture, the package, where it says, you know, image generated with AI, but right above that, it says no artificial colors, flavors, or preservatives.
Wow.
Everything on the package is completely artificial. Do we trust what's inside it? At least it has no artificial flavors or colors.
Well, that's talking about the product, right? I don't want to feel like an apologist for them, but they're talking about the product not having artificial things, not the picture. That's a different category.
I just found it entertaining,
yeah.
The juxtaposition.
It is. Carl, did you have something?
I had one other observation this week. I got a device for like health monitoring. It's like a something like, you know, like a thermometer or something. You know, you take your temperature or something like that. And
that sounds pretty specific.
Yeah, okay. I'm not going to say you know, exactly what, and because I might want to use it, but it had like, you know, some features I wanted that were like smart. So I was getting ready. I was setting it up, and it uses Bluetooth and stuff. And I was like, great. And I set up the app, and you know, put my fake name in there, and then I was like, okay, great. Now pair it with the phone, and then you can use the app, right? So I was ready to go. And it said that the app required location. And I was like, no. So I'm not going to use all those features with it.
Why does it need your location?
I don't know. Hmm. I mean, I just wanted to do the thing and, like, give me the information. You know, if it's a toothbrush or, you know, something that's smart, I want extra stuff, yeah. But I don't really want to give my location. Why is it that it has to...
And it's mandatory? You can't use it if
to connect to it. I don't get it. I don't understand why. So I either have to figure out how to, like, spoof my location or, like, take it out, like, run it, like, a mile or two or, like, somewhere else. Like, go over there and then do that to, like, do whatever I'm doing and then, like, then bring it all the way back. It just...
Won't it update your location when you go back?
No, because it's only when you're... connecting, like, with the phone to use their smart app, you know, because it has an app. So yeah, I can, like, it might work without the app, but then you don't get the benefit. And they don't say that when you get, you know, it's smart, but you end up having all these surprises, like, oh, great, we're gonna have exactly where you are when you're doing this thing, like, you know, using a water pick or some smart toaster or whatever.
Uh-huh.
I don't really need that. I don't need them to know. Why does that have to be a part of it being smart? I mean,
well,
that's too
obviously
smart.
Don't want people to even know what the device is, so why should you let the people who made the device know anything about you? And that's
right.
That's perfectly okay.
But I mean, that's like too smart, right? Like, it's not, I mean, it's smart, but it's
no,
like,
it's not smart. What's smart about
it's
that?
Overly
I think
smart.
It's
like
stupid.
Nosy. It's smart and nosy. It's like smart aleck.
Yeah, it's giving away too much information that you don't need to give away, and we do that every day.
Anyway, I just wanted to add that in as something I was toiling with.
Well, congratulations for holding your own there.
Stop making connected devices that require location for every single thing. Just stop. That's my request.
All right. We have some listener mail, and you can write your listener mail to oth@2600.com. We'd love to hear from you. I just finished listening to the show. I was wondering how someone who stopped using Signal or any other messaging app is any different than someone stopping email, an email address. So we were talking about this a few weeks ago where people who stopped using Signal were still having messages sent to their Signal number, and they were never getting them because they weren't using Signal anymore, and the people who sent them didn't know they weren't getting them because they didn't get any message saying they didn't get it. This listener wants to know or says that the onus is 100% on the user of the service, not on the service. Well, I would disagree there because in the case of Signal, they don't generate any kind of a bounce to tell you that this address is no longer valid. If somebody ever used Signal and you send a message to them, your message will appear to have gone through. You might not see two check marks. You might see one, but there's a number of reasons why that could happen. Whereas you send email to somebody whose email address no longer works, you will get a bounce back. Unless they just walk away from their email account. That's more of a parallel to this. If they have an email address and they abandon it, then you might not know that they never saw your email. So that's something that I think most people are aware of when sending email, but they're not aware of that when they're sending a text message via Signal, that somebody could still have the same phone number, but using a different app to read messages. So, you know, if you change your email address, you don't have the same email address using a different provider. You get a different email address. So in the case of Signal, your phone number will remain the same if you use a different app, and you might not know that when you're sending the person a message. That's the difference. Another thing I'd like to comment on is perhaps you should start using the phrase Trump regime instead of administration. I believe we have been using that phrase.
Yeah, I started that this week.
Yeah. Everything they do fits more in line with a good authoritarian regime anyway. And thank you, Jab, for that that thoughtful letter. We have this from Tom. Listening to your show right now from Berlin. I like to check news from time to time. The less, the better these days. I hear that. And then listening to Off the Hook or Off the Wall provides an interesting opinionated commentary. Keep up the good work. Being Czech, I cringed hearing the pronunciation. Okay, all right. I said Czechia because that's how it's spelled, okay? God, I went through the same thing when I pronounced Spokane as if it had a silent E at the end, which it does. It's not my fault. Yeah, so get rid of the H, and then I'll say Czechia, or put a K there. Czechia, that's how you're supposed to say it. Say Czech as in Czech Republic that you pronounced right. Well, that's easy. And then just add the IA, Czechia. I'll do that from now on, but, you know, there's no manual for these things. By the way, all people I know there don't use this new term. It was somehow pushed by the tourism department, but it never really stuck with Czech people. So Czech Republic is still a sure shot. Signed, Tom. Thank you, Tom, for that helpful info. I would like to get that verified from some people, Czech natives, that you don't call it Czechia, you know, a Czech Republic, whatever it is. Yes, Gila.
So Czechia is an invented term equivalent to, say, Nolita?
Well, if it's an invented term, how come they know how to pronounce it? You know, if it's invented, anything goes.
This reminds me of the Turkey name change.
Yeah. Well, that was that's something they're very passionate about.
Yeah, I'm not questioning it.
Because they literally don't want to be affiliated with the birds. They really don't.
Right.
And I didn't know they were even related. I thought it was a coincidence, but there's a whole story behind that.
Well, check yourself.
And this letter here is interesting because it involves a clip, actually. It's a clip from May of 1991, our show back then. I think it's May 22nd, I believe. Emanuel hypothesizes an unimaginable scenario where a new Hitler might rise 30 years in the future. That would put it in what, like the early 20-teens or something. And if one did, they would be helped by all the power we grant technology. The caller thinks this is an absurd idea. well, it's always fun to listen to the old shows and find little moments like this. Lob, we're going to play the excerpt that you sent us. Let's listen to 1991.
So what did I say that made it sound simple?
Well, no, I just didn't want to give the impression that, you know, that we're going on saying something about the, you know, the evil government or the evil corporations all plotting and scheming, because I don't really think they're to that point yet. But
right.
we're giving away a lot of tools, a lot of methods that could one day be used for just that purpose. Like, imagine a Hitler rising in, say, 30 years somewhere after all of this computer technology is in place,
right,
to allow them to monitor people, to spy on people, to categorize people.
Exactly. And that's where I take the big issue with you right there. I don't see there being a Hitler in 30 years. That whole thing went down in 1939, whatever, because of a different world. I don't see that coming about today, because there are going to be a lot of other people who are, well, whatever. That's what we part company. What is going down now is racism, sex, all the isms, and they're operating just fine with the technology that's not yet become the monster which it may become, but that is the helpful thing which you think it is. Even the helpful thing, well, given the helpful side of it, we still have wage oppression and jobs we hate and this stuff. So I wish you could just like address yourself to other aspects of life than just this technology possible invasion which might come about if a Hitler, you know, comes into power.
Well, I mean, it's not going to be a Hitler, but it is going to be something else. We can't predict what. That's always been our
talent, not predicting the future. I don't think the invasion will take place. They'll take place anyway. They have the information that on people, files on people through stuff that was around 20 years ago. You know, Social Security numbers, like you said, they had Social Security numbers in place a long time ago. And they have enough technology they had 20 years ago is enough to trace all of the, you know, when the death squads, when the right-wing death squads want to get somebody, they've got their low-level technology, as low as it is in all South American countries, Central American countries, that exists. It's much less advanced, right? But still, they have no problem going out and getting the people. So we don't got to worry about this great advance in technology. We got to worry about other things that they're going to come down. If someone's going to come down like Hitler in 30 years, they're not going to need sophisticated technological knowledge bases to get us. Okay.
Well, that kind of tool will make things so much easier.
Okay, Eric. Thanks a lot.
Thanks for calling.
Wow. Okay. Well, that was something. By the way, I got the date wrong. It was May 23rd, 1991. 30 years from then is 2021, not 2011. So, yeah. Wow. Okay. I don't know why we picked 30 years, but things kind of changed, I guess. Any thoughts, folks?
Yeah. I mean, I listened to that earlier as well. I was really astounded by the conversation and this prescience. And I was reminded of that expression. I don't know if you've ever heard it. The you know, even a stop clock is right twice a day.
Am I supposed to be the stop clock?
You can be whatever you want in that analogy.
All right.
And,
well,
yeah. Look, I give you credit for it. I think it's really extraordinary. But like, you make enough prophecies like this, you know, eventually one of them is going to come true.
It's not like I sit around making prophecies. It's pretty obvious to me that if you have, we're talking about it tonight, about technology and how it will eventually be used against people. And you have to ask yourself, well, you know, 100 years ago with this technology, what might oppressive regimes have done? If you just think about these things, the warnings will be very clear to you.
Yeah. Now, it really is. I thought it was a really extraordinary clip. And I love that. Our listener heard this going through the archives, and it's I shudder to think about what people are going to say about these shows 30 years from now.
Well, I love that listeners are going through the archives. And if you don't know where the archives are, let me tell you. They're at 2600.com/offthehook. We have every single show, except for the ones that got stolen out of my car, online. And you can just listen to anything you want, as well as other radio shows, too. So, and again, write to us, oth@2600.com. That's our email address, and tell us your thoughts and feelings, and give us any kind of feedback.
Absolutely, and I do love every so often pulling up just one of the old shows at random, and that was a real gem our listener found. I would have been listening to the show around then and thinking of all the weird possibilities of this whole scene, and you know, concerns like yours and everything. But also, I just remember being a '90s kid thinking, while in front of my computer, you know, what could these be like in 30 years? Is it going to be like a nice, sparkly Back to the Future 2 sort of future, or, you know, a dark and gritty Blade Runner sort of future? But either way, it was like, well, computers will do more and more of the drudgery, more and more of the crap work, while people will be freed up to think and create. And now here we are in 2025, and the computers more and more are being turned to for thinking and creating, and human creativity is being left by the wayside.
All the poets on the street, it's really a hazard, you know? Everyone's just basically creating. All right, we have one more story before we go out tonight. And by the way, we do have overtime tonight on YouTube, 8 o'clock, channel 2600. We will see you there. You can call us. This is an organization called ARF, A-A-R-F. It's a nonprofit organization that rescues neglected and abused dogs. Yeah, ARF. Cute, huh? From Alaskan villages. But they've had to suspend some of their services. They're trying to get the word out that they're still in business despite having their Facebook page deleted earlier this month. We literally, as of almost 2 weeks ago, went from 50,000 followers and 14 years of Facebook to zero, said longtime volunteer Trina Johnson. So we recreated the Facebook page, but we didn't get our 50,000 followers back. Johnson said it's unclear exactly why the Facebook page was deleted. She believes it goes back to an incident 2 years ago when the organization had its page hacked and its administrator blocked. She said that despite having reached out to Facebook, they haven't gotten answers and are now resigned to starting over. That's obscene that they have to do that. Johnson said it's been difficult to start from scratch, She said ARF, which stands for Alaskan Animal Rescue Friends, has consistently placed between 500 to 700 dogs a year since it started in 2011, and had information on its page on most of them. They took every video, photo. We probably have 30,000 videos and photos of our dogs available, so you can't even go back and see the history of all our dogs that have been adopted. But the biggest problem, according to Johnson, is the loss of 50,000 followers. These are people they depend on for donations, adopting animals, volunteering to foster. Without that outreach, we have no way of asking for help. So we're helping out here by spreading the word about this. And I can attest to that, too. It's extremely hard to reach people with the fragmentation of social media. You know, we used to be able to reach so many more people than we do now. We're not doing anything different. But people are reading particular platforms less and just spreading out a lot more, and it's harder to get a message to everybody. So this, though, with losing a Facebook page, that can hurt a lot of people. Now, Johnson said the organization has temporarily suspended flying new dogs in from the villages because it doesn't have enough foster homes to place them in. ARF is still offering adoption clinics on Sunday for animals who are already in care, but Johnson wants people to know that while the old page has been deleted, there is a new one they can search for. I don't think people realize that they aren't getting updates because they have to go back in and refollow us. So here's the thing, though. Facebook can fix this. You know, this is all data. You know, somewhere in Facebook archives are the 50,000 followers. Somewhere are all of the videos. It's all there. You just need somebody with the access to restore it. And while this may be related to the hack a few years ago, this could also be administrator error. It could be a technical glitch. There's all kinds of things that can happen. You know, it's important to keep backups. I'm not sure if it's easy or hard to even back up your Facebook page. I never tried. I don't really spend any time there. But they need to make it easier for people to do that, so that when something like this happens, and it does happen a lot, it's fairly trivial to recover from it. You should not hear stories like this where someone has poured their life into building a service and have it all go away and nobody is there to respond. So there's only one solution to this. That's for Facebook to get up off their asses and restore this, because obviously these people are who they say they are. Alex.
This is such a long-standing problem. Interestingly enough, in the European Union, they have something called the Digital Services Act. And if your content is moderated in a way that you don't agree with, or if your account is suspended, based on this new EU-wide law, there are these dispute settlement bodies to which you can actually appeal the decision of a social media company by deplatforming you. And they will hear your appeal, and they will make some kind of decision. And the platforms are supposed to respect those decisions. They're not actually legally binding on them, but they're supposed to respect them. So it's really quite interesting when you think about this in the context of there being literally no legal remedies, and actually there are. In the EU, they've made some progress in this respect.
All right. We're going to have to end on that. But you know what? I hear this music behind us. Does anybody recognize this? No?
Yes, I do. That's hold music.
Very good, Alex.
I've heard that so many times. It's horrible. It sounds like softcore porn music, but it's hold music.
I would say it's like vaporwave.
Why can't it be both?
It can be, but it's like Playboy Channel, mid-90s kind of music.
Well, I think you do it an injustice. Kyle, do you want to reveal what this is?
Oh, you can read. You can let people know. I just saw some people referencing it on social media, and I thought we should talk about what it actually is.
It's called Cisco's Opus Number 1, and it's the hold music if you ever called Cisco.
or anyone that has that for their call management.
It's Cisco Call Manager. The default presence is Opus Number 1 by Tim Carlton and his high school friend, Derek Deal. They recorded it on a four-track tape recorder in 1989. And in a YouTube video, Tim mentioned the following on how he created the sound and why the stereo version is not very good. The reason was that I used an Alesis Midiverb 2 or 3, specifically the 3-tap pan, to hide the fact that I was playing this live on a DX7 IIFD. And the notes would either cut off when I play unison patches and run out of polyphony, or I have no idea what I'm saying here. When I change patches, the solution was to plug it in mono to the MIDI verb on one side, R8 on the other side, stereo into the Tascam, and go. Yeah, all you musicians out there, hopefully you appreciated that. But this whole music is a classic, apparently. I don't know why it's being talked about now, but we figured we might as well give it the attention it deserves.
I think we all feel like a lot is on hold right now, but just stand by. Someone will be with you shortly.
Yeah, and if you do stand by, in about 8 minutes, you can join us over on YouTube for another edition of Overtime, where we take phone calls. And next week here on WBAI, we will be taking phone calls. So mark that on your calendar, and we will see you then, 7 p.m. on 99.5 FM. Please support WBAI. Keep the station alive. Keep the station going. We are going to need this place more than you can imagine. Buddy.wbai.org is the best way to do that. Good night, everyone. Thank you.